Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another reality show. I am Golden Hawk, and I am the host of this fabulous show. Let's all take a deep breath. Because, you know, the energies are really moving, people. I mean, they are moving. They're not just moving waters and tsunamis and blizzards and the upper part of the United States. Consciousness itself is moving, is shaking, is creating potentials for awareness that in no other time in history have we had the potential to awaken to truly who we are. I mean, truly who we are, not the name on our license, not the job description as a career, not even just if we're a mother or a sister or a father or an uncle, but the essence, I mean, the real essence, the part of us that is eternal, the part of us that is truly kind of in charge of all of this. And it appears in our dimension as duality, as right and wrong and good and bad and light and dark. Yet from a more expanded point of view, there is this exquisite dance, an exquisite unfoldment of evolution, of consciousness, and of my personal belief, a new humanity, humanity from a whole new level. And tonight's show is absolutely in support of the new humanity that I'm speaking of. I'm really, really excited. Tonight I have two guests on. They're each going to speak for an hour. And what's very exciting about tonight's show is there's a theme that I didn't even realize it. It was a subconscious creation. I realized it in the woods today. The theme for tonight's show is really about helping the audience to become aware of the potentials that exist on the planet right now. It's not about proof, and even though we have that. It's not about judgment. It's really about kind of going back into our inner child, the place where it was all just curiosity. It wasn't about can it be or can it not be. It was just about what can we make it? How can we experience this? And you'll understand more as the show goes on. So let me introduce my absolute beautiful guest, Linda from Benevolent Spirits. Welcome to the show, Linda.
Thank you so much, Goldie. It's so nice to be with you.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. I have been very excited about our show since we booked it a few months ago.
I have too.
Because, yeah, please, if you can, your site, Benevolent Spirits, I mean, the name it really embodies it, and yet there's so much to the Benevolent Spirits in your life. If you could just share with the audience what that's about, that would be awesome.
Oh, certainly. If you don't mind, can I give a little background on how I began seeing these and things?
Perfect. You call it. Yes, yes.
Okay. my awakening journey, it began around 4 years ago. I had always felt energy my entire life, like in my chest, and I'd see auras and things around people like that. But around 4 years ago, I had an out-of-body experience, and my kundalini energy awakened. That night, and it was so warm, and it just felt as though it snapped and ran up my spine, and I had an out-of-body experience. I was in the outer room of my bedroom, and there were wispy light beings, and you could see your body laying there. You had absolutely no concern for it at all, and it was just the most incredible feeling of bliss that you can ever imagine, and so much energy at our house. I just couldn't imagine what was happening. And so after that happened, I began seeing the orbs, and they can communicate with you. They make formations. They do processes. People will take a snapshot of an orb, and you will see circles in them sometime or what will look like an imperfection. But they're actually not. When you're looking at them, they're doing things. It's almost like they're boiling, and then they spit off these little sensors that just fall everywhere. Yeah, it's like stardust is falling. And so they're really beautiful, and just, you know, it's kind of like living in a kaleidoscope now from what you see, but they're so beautiful, and they've really awakened my consciousness. I really believe that's why the orbs are here. And our home is just is so incredible. I don't know if it's a little mini spaceport or what's going on, but there's just so many, and they range, they vary in size, they make formations. Again, they do processes. We have two St. Bernards, Samson, our male, he's very sensitive to them. And it's funny because I'll be watching him in the house and I'll look over and his eyes will be following the same thing. And my son Michael, he passed away last year from a heart aneurysm, but we went through many of the same experiences. And he ran in my room after that night and said, "Can you feel the energy here? It's just so intense." And it's just been really incredible, the awakening. I worked at Ohio State at that time, and I remember the next morning I'm walking into work, and it's late summer, and I was standing waiting to cross the road, and a tree, a big tree with all the leaves, every single leaf fell off the tree. So I looked up like,
at
oh,
once?
My gosh. At once. And so I had leaves up to my thighs thinking, like, I can't believe this. You know, it's just so many things happen just consecutively, I think, to wake you up, to make you aware. And it's just really beautiful to know that there's beings there that want to help us and that really want to awaken our consciousness, because I agree with you. It is all about awareness, and we're at a real turning point in our world with 2012 coming up and all these new energies bombarding the planet right now.
Absolutely.
And you see things in the news every day that's just so frightening. I think the energies, I think people should open to them if they can and try to balance them and have balance in their life, because this is such a powerful time on planet Earth.
Absolutely. I could not, everything you just said. Now, I have a ton of questions. Okay, because when you say that they communicate with you, is it telepathic?
It is telepathic.
Okay, so there's just a knowing, and is it in words and or pictures or feelings or all three and then some?
It's kind of all of the above. For example, I was setting out on our back deck one day at Choctaw Lake. That's our home. We're visiting New Mexico right now, and the energy out here looks totally different. It's just interesting. I was watching the orbs, and they make formations, and they just create such bliss within you, and that's really a great feeling to have. But it's telepathic things. For example, we had a fire pit in the yard, and I just got a telepathic message in my head, go run your hands through the ashes of the fire pit. And I thought, why would I do that? You know, I'm not there to use that. But I did, and I ran my hands through there, and there was a beautiful ball in there made out of some material. No one has been able to tell me what it is. And it reminded my son of the ball on the cat's neck in Men in Black. It was
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
I thought that was really a cool thing. And
so it's almost, are they leaving gifts?
I'm
like
sorry?
Interdimensional, like, are they? Did they leave that gift? Did they create that gift?
I think they did create that, because I've shown it to so many people, and it always changes its appearance a little when you hold it up to light, and no one can tell me what it is, what it's made of, and it's just really amazing. I keep it out, you know, in a special place in my house, like, wow, look at this. This is really beautiful. But other things have happened. For example, I was driving to work one day, and a message came into my head. They're all in my car. You look around, and I'm always thinking, can anyone else see this? But it's like...
Can I interrupt for one second? Can you see them with your physical eye, or is it just through the lens when you take the pictures?
No, I see them with my physical eyes.
Because of the Kundalini awakening.
That's when it started. The Kundalini awakening was...
I'm not trying to interrupt. I just got you speak and 1,000 questions come up for me. I apologize. Please go on.
Oh, please don't apologize.
I'm very excited about this.
No,
I want to see the orbs. That's what I want to see the orbs.
They're really amazing to see. That's why I can describe, like, I know on Facebook and things, my husband's in a lot of the groups, and Right. Like orbs, what are they, and things like that. And people will say, like, oh, there's so many imperfections, and that's why I'm trying to explain. No, they really aren't imperfections. These
right.
are doing a boiling light process and shooting off the almost stardust, which looks like little sensors. And I'm not sure what all that's about. I really don't know. But one day driving to work, for example, I got a message, you're going to have to help the guy in the silver truck in front of you in a few minutes. And I thought, that's ridiculous. You know, you're just imagining things. And so I just turned up my CD. But then in about 5 minutes, his truck was running off the road down a hill. He had had a heart attack. And no
wow.
one was stopping in rush hour. And so I pulled my car off the side of the road. I didn't have my cell phone with me. But I flagged someone down on the freeway, and a guy got out in scrubs, and he was able to save his life.
Oh,
so it
wow.
seems like that. I mean, yeah, I know.
Oh, Linda, what a beautiful story. See, you know, Hollywood paints such a crazy picture of anything metaphysical being here to either, you know, make chicken soup out of us or,
exactly.
you know, or crush, kill, and destroy. And it's like, boy, I have had nothing but the opposite experiences in my own life with some
mm-hmm.
extraterrestrials and
wow.
you know, balls of, and yeah, I've had a few. I've been on a ship and I've had some transmissions come into my forehead with a beam of light, and
that's wonderful.
I mean, you know, yeah, no, I definitely have my own things going on. I think it's what brings us together, Linda, because when you have experiences as opposed to just hearing of another's experience, you really do recognize that it's benevolence. It's not
oh, exactly.
because it really is. It's the experience itself is, like you said, it's a bliss. I feel quite blessed to have
oh,
had
I think
such
it's an absolute blessing.
Yeah.
And another
yeah.
time I had, I was at work, and this feeling just came over me, just like your house is on fire kind of feeling, like you've got to help this elderly lady, you know. She's in grave okay. danger. Someone has mixed up her medication, and they're going to
oh, wow.
try to kill her. And so that actually came to pass, that I called, and we got her a squad into the hospital and things, and she was terrified for her life, so she stayed with us for a while. But we've become such good friends, you know, over these past years, and she's like, I'm so grateful, and I'm thinking, like, well, it wasn't me, you know. But she's really a big one in believing in intervention and things like that. So
yeah, well,
I
and don't
really
you believe if you
that's happened
exactly? And I, because I think on some level, in America, I can only speak for America because that's where I grew up, and you know, this where you know I've spent most of my I've spent a little time in Mexico and Canada, but you know, I wouldn't call that quite you know a world traveler.
mm-hmm.
But in America, we are starving for the imagination,
exactly.
we are starving, and in that starvation of it, when Hollywood comes in and kind of plays their, you know, E.T. or anything metaphysical is here to, you know, gobble us up and kill us, between those two experiences, people shut their energy fields down in sheer fear, and what they are missing is, you know, I know that there's a lot of stuff going on in 2012, but the truth is there's a lot of stuff going on literally in this now moment.
I agree.
You know,
I think it's already begun.
Absolutely. I mean, and people are like, well, if it's begun, you know, for you, why hasn't it begun for me? And it's like, you know, I try to tell people, what's your level of openness? Are you open to, we were taught, you know, certain things as kids, whether from our religion or from, you know, just our caretakers saying, you know, what
exactly.
they believe
so
was truth. Yeah.
Kill the imagination and make you not believe in yourself.
Yeah.
So I think
because
after all those years of conditioning, it's really hard to have a breakthrough like that. And I said,
it is.
And I had those extreme experiences to let me know. And especially now, you know, with all the orb activity, even Larry, my husband, he made a lot of videos. We stayed in Taos, New Mexico for a while. Now we're in the Santa Fe area. We're just sort of traveling around New Mexico for a few months. But
awesome.
They're still with us. I mean, and they're beautiful.
So they travel as you travel. In other words, they're with you. They're not necessarily at your apartment because of the, or at your house. It's you and your husband that are bringing these energies in.
Well, I hate to say that, but, I mean, they do travel with us. But we've had so many, like, exquisite, just, he did a video filled with gold, and it was all of these.
I just watched that today. That is
so that? I love
Ava
that.
Cassidy. I saw her. I went, oh, I love her voice, too.
I love Ava
Great
Cassidy.
Video.
I
yes.
do, too. We've become friends with her sister, Margaret, through this. And,
oh,
nice. Yeah, she's a really fantastic person to talk with, and she really loves Ava, and she has Ava Cassidy artwork, and
oh,
she does
nice.
A lot with that. But, yeah, I mean, there at that house, when Michael, my son, was going through some of his biggest trials, they would show up en masse. I mean, it was just really incredible. And he could hear them coming in. He said when they would arrive by the thousands, it sounded like a train coming in. And so, I don't know, that was all really beautiful for me. And just to know that they were there for him, you know, makes me just love these things so much and really grateful.
And they also, you know, they do travel the interdimensionally. They're still with him, you know, as when the body is no longer here, the spirit is still very much aware. And because one of the experiences that I had when I was working with a shaman was I lived through my own death.
You did?
And I in a lucid dream. I was shot in the back of my head, point blank. Pardon?
That's amazing. Oh, my gosh.
Well, and it's just because a lot of shamans, what happens is, it's interesting, like some people will call themselves shamans, and, you know, it's funny, Daniel was talking about this, and, you know, hang a little shutter on their front door and say shaman, you know, shaman practice. But the truth about shamanism is it really is about understanding death on another level of awareness, that it is a shift in consciousness. It is a shift in awareness. It is not an ending only. It is just going from one dimension to another. And
I agree.
When you have that awareness, it really opens up the non-physical plane to be not just something that, you know, you only see in the movie Avatar per se, but it becomes an actual reality that, because I don't necessarily see like you see, but because I've had enough of my own experiences, I know enough to trust that if I go into the woods, the magic that heals my uncomfortableness in life sometimes,
yes,
is absolutely the presence of beings. That is what they know how to manage my energy field. They know how to put me back into balance. All I have to do is be receptive to it.
Exactly. Anytime I feel ungrounded or off balance, I go into the woods or I go up to my mountain and I just try to breathe that in and just get centered and be okay. And I am okay then.
And it's genuine, isn't it?
Spirits and all that. Yes, it's very genuine. And it
exactly.
can really talk me down. Just, I mean, not in, literally, but it just makes you feel so good to be in nature. And just to ground yourself, I think that's so important for everyone to do.
Yeah, I think it's part of the awareness that because, see, I think as we, and I don't think, I kind of know this, and I don't even know how I know this, but I just, as we become one with nature, we'll stop destroying it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good point.
We can't destroy that which we're aware of as self. We can only do that in unconsciousness. We can't do that in awareness. And there's not a judgment, you know, it's like, I get that, you know, I really believe that this whole dance of duality and everything we've been through has played a purpose, and I really hold no, I'm not angry or, you know, I'm not pissed off per se at, you know, government conspiracies and things of that nature. I'm just excited and, you know, really wanting people to know that there is a choice that, you know, on some levels, the dark exists, and on some levels, the light exists. And then there's a level that almost goes beyond both the light and the dark, which is a pure spirit that knows nothing but total oneness as a consciousness.
Right.
You know, because when I see those thousands of orbs in your pictures, each and every orb is aware of each and every orb. You know, it's almost like, similar to, I guess, like a hive mentality.
I think so.
Where they're, don't you feel that? And they're all kind of working, you know, for the good of the whole, which is interesting because that's another, you know, one of the conspiracies that, you know, right now is an interesting one from my perspective is that, you know, if we were to become one planet, whether it be one through the Euro or, you know, everybody's like, oh, that means, you know, that it's the new world taking over. And it's like, you know, that could be one way to do it, but there is one consciousness that is becoming an awareness of this planet that there is going to be a oneness. You know, I believe that the boundaries of countries are going to inevitably dissolve. And
so do I.
Not gonna, don't you kind of, like, no more passports proving who... It's going to be like you want to go to Afghanistan, you go to Afghanistan. You want to go to, you know, Belgium. Not that we need permission or not, you know, this whole idea of border wars and things of that. It's like
all of this is,
yeah, it's very, and it's very unaware. You know,
it's
like the thumb saying to the pinky, get off the palm. Yeah, I mean, what? It's just...
Well, I agree.
Right? Because, you know, once you come into the bliss that, especially once we come into the bliss of multi-dimensions, actually showing compassion, a compassion that is truly beyond, you know, what they write in romance novels. I mean, I'm not talking about, you know, love with a condition. I am talking about a magic that is beyond our comprehension, yet very tangible. Once people experience that, you know, it just shifts everything. It's like there's a peace that comes about and a natural desire to share and a natural desire to help your fellow neighbor or your...
Exactly.
Whether
it totally changes your perspective completely.
Yeah.
I don't think you can ever go back. I think that's Red Hot Chili Peppers' song, Once You Know, You Can Never Go Back. It's true.
Yeah.
You're just not the same person anymore. You're not the same ego-based person.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you totally. Totally. And I think people are afraid. I think if you mention to people, you know, coming into awareness or consciousness, a lot of them feel like, you know, well, you know, if I don't want to have to do something because it's, you know, what God expects me to do when I don't want to do it. And I'm like, what makes you think God wants you to do anything you don't want to do? You know, it's like they can't even imagine it from a space of living in passion and not doing any kind of work that you felt was mundane. You know, that mundane things would not, you know, and I'm not talking just about laundry and stuff. I'm talking about there's a large percent of the population in cubicles doing extremely mundane work for a paycheck. I don't
it's
even know how
sad,
they...
It's very isn't it?
Well, it's limited, and I think what's happening is their consciousness is pushing its way through, like it's a chick hatching.
Have you felt time acceleration?
Pardon?
Do you feel the time acceleration? Is that something that...
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Well, and here's...
Terrence McKenna said the spiral is tightening. I mean, it definitely is.
And the interesting about it, in order to experience the beauty of it, you have to go into stillness. And that's such a paradox because the energy wants you to speed up. I mean, it's easy to interpret the energy as, I got to go. I got to go faster. I got so much to do. I can't get it. And yet, if you just go and sit still, it will come to you in the most magical, beautiful way.
I agree.
You know, and a lot of people don't know that. You know, they get caught up in the...
I know, you just have to set your burdens aside sometime and really just allow for that presence to come in, that energy. And I'm seeing a lot of things not picking up on the digital images. They're translucent, almost spherical, dark and light, and you can see through them, but everywhere they go, they run, and it almost creates a melting appearance. And I don't know what that's all about. I talked to Daniel about that, Daniel Jacob.
Okay, yeah.
And he just said, you know, maybe that's like when they're putting up a new building and they show you a picture of what it's going to look like. He said maybe they're giving you a little peek behind that veil. of here's what's to come. It reminds me of the movie What Dreams May Come, where he jumps into the painting. Do you know what I'm talking about?
It completely. It's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, I absolutely love that.
Yeah. Yeah, Robin really, he rocks a few of the metaphysical movies. Yeah, yeah.
I know. I always like his taste in movies. I always admire him for being so brave to do those roles.
Exactly, exactly.
But I just wonder, what is all that? Because my crown chakra always feels like it just has an axe in it, basically, and my third eye. Do you experience that? And
I think
I'm getting downloaded so hard.
Yes. Well, I have experienced like what I feel like a pin through my pineal gland.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the center of my brain, there is this pin, and I don't know if it's growing, cracking, you know, but I just know it's so centered, and it's like, whoa, this is such a, it's an intense precision, you know, and it's
it
funny.
Is.
Pardon?
It is, but I think over the years with fluorinated water and toothpaste, it's become calcified, and I really think we're maybe having processes to sort of like make it work like you're supposed to again.
I agree totally with that. And I also believe that, you know, because I know there's a lot of, you know, stuff that can make the body go wrong. And the truth of the matter is the technology, and that's, I use that word, this is not about human technology. There is a technology in the awareness itself that literally spontaneous healings from anything we have, everything is reversible, everything. Everything, and that includes what was Superman?
Christopher Reeve. Yeah.
Now I believe that we're gonna at some point, like I've been told that we have the technology to grow limbs. We don't do that, but it's only because we don't believe it can be done. But the wiring and the programming, so to speak, is there. It's just a matter of us knowing it in our being. For it to kind of kick back on, but we are going from two strands of DNA to back to 12, which brings tremendous healing to the physical body, including a longevity, not necessarily forever, but clearly the body can live longer than, you know, 70 to 90 years, which is the average lifespan for most people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are being programmed or rewired to, you know, not just experience the multi-dimensions, but to experience our own health from a multi-dimensional space.
Right. And I think everyone's DNA is programmed to activate at a certain time. And I think seeing the 1111 and all the other series of numbers helps that awakening.
Absolutely. That's why
too?
I believe LED. Absolutely. I agree with it. Totally. I remember there was a movie once called Confidence, and it was, you know, an interesting movie about a con. And what was interesting is in the movie, I was in the theaters, at one point they made the entire screen, the clock radio next to this guy's bed, and it was 11:11 on the screen in this very, like, yeah, and this movie was nothing, it was not a May Dreams, What Dreams May Come kind of movie. It was, you know, there was violence, it was a con artist, and I just couldn't, I was in the theater, I went, oh my God, they just, and no lie, they flashed it for like 30 seconds. They didn't take it off the screen.
It probably activated so many people that night.
Exactly. Well, look at Avatar, though. Look at, what do you think?
Avatar
is a big
is
activation
awesome.
Movie.
Exactly.
Phenomenal.
I hear so many people have like really a depressed syndrome after seeing it, because I think we're re-remembering things like, wow, why can't it be that way? You know, the oneness and everything has an effect on everything else. That was a beautiful movie. I was really disappointed it didn't win, like, Best Picture or something bigger, you know.
Avatar didn't win Best Picture?
No.
I didn't know that. I mean, I don't watch the Oscars, so I didn't know it. Wow.
No, it got a couple. It got, like, Best Special Effects, something like that. And another
but
one.
It didn't win Best Picture. It's like they're so afraid to give it, you know, to...
I agree. I think they're like, oh, that was too far out there. We can't. No.
Or they don't want us to, you know, it's like they don't want to acknowledge really how powerful it was. Because to be quite honest, Academy or not, that movie, in my opinion, was as powerful as when Star Wars came out in the 70s.
I agree.
That was another activation
beautiful
movie. Yeah.
We're just to give you a clue, like, hey, have you ever given this any consideration? Yeah, we loved that when we saw that. It was just such a wonderful movie.
Well, I mean, you're living it. That's, I mean, you know, for the listeners out there, benevolentspirits.com, I mean, the site is so exquisite. I mean, there's videos, there's music, there's such a plethora of interdimensional beings at Linda's house. It's, you know, it's like, because you hear all the time people that go, well, there's no proof.
I know. Or someone will write and say, you should clean your camera lens. And I'm thinking,
I see this
isn't the camera.
It's not in the camera. Exactly. It's like they're afraid to embrace that what they were taught.
And people get really angry. People are really afraid of change.
They are afraid of change.
And I think they know it's upon them because the awareness is just increasing so fast. And another thing that's happened with all this, you can sort of discern truth much easier than before.
Oh,
have
my
you
God.
That yourself?
Oh, my God. I can't tell you how many. I'm not in a relationship right now. Three of my good friends all found out that either their partners were literally, their whole identity was a lie. The whole identity. I mean, it was like, or that they were having total relationships without their knowledge. I mean, the truth is coming up like, you know, I told everybody, it's no longer, you know, choose whether you tell the truth or not. It's a matter of when the truth comes up, either acknowledge it or deny it. I mean, because that's the truth.
I just think it's all going to be revealed. I really do. I don't think anyone can hide behind a mask anymore.
Exactly.
Because it's just not going to happen. And I think there's going to be a lot more telepathy as people become more and more advanced into this, into these new.
Now,
energies.
Are you think telepathy between you and Larry, your husband?
Yeah, we do have some between us. But the beings and I, it's just really incredible, really.
Okay.
It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
The energies at our house are so strong. I mean, completely strong. When Michael, he was having the out-of-body experience, and he came back into his body, and he asked, are you still here? And he had a fireplace in his bedroom, tempered glass, no fire, anything in it, but it totally blew the glass out of his doors.
Oh, my God.
Across the room, like, yeah, we're still here. But it wasn't anything scary. It made us laugh, like, wow. You know, I'm like, you just had to ask that. But they just always give you, you know, like heads up or, I don't know, they're really great. It's just so life-changing. It's
Linda,
almost
it's
like
a tremendous blessing. I mean, it's a tremendous blessing.
There's
no other way to describe that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. If I wouldn't have known all this existed, I don't think I could have handled his death at all. I really don't. But this is just so comforting to me. And to be able to feel his spiritual presence at so much peace, and it's really, you know, I feel very fortunate because of that.
So now, are you feeling his presence around the house as well, helping you, you know, because I don't know the woman's name or I forgot it. She started channeling her son from the other side.
Is that right? I have not channeled him or anything, but yes, I feel his presence, and I'm able to recognize different people's energy, and that's definitely him.
And he
can respond. You know, I won't say out loud. It's all telepathic. You know, just say things to him, and he will acknowledge that he heard that. You know, which is this powerful energy, and it just puts a smile on your face, like, oh, you know, thank you. You know, you made my day more than you can ever imagine.
Oh, indeed. Well, and I would just assume that the intensity will just become, or the awareness, and because, you know, people think intensity as a negative, but intensity can be very much a positive experience when we don't resist it. My guess would be the intensity of that will simply increase, and, you know, if there's a purpose, and I'm sure there is, because I don't believe anything lacks purpose. Everything has purpose, even if we don't know
it. I agree. Everything happens for a reason, I think.
Exactly. You know, and do people call you Pollyanna when you think that, because you think that?
Oh, yeah. I've been called everything like that. Mary Poppins and all that. Always. Like,
yeah, me too.
I was always a very unusual person. And all my life, I've always been like, molecule-looking things, like doing formations and things, you know, but you just don't mention that to people after a while because
right.
it's like, okay, that's not good. But Michael could see those too, and we would laugh about it. And I'd say, maybe everyone sees that. And he's like, I don't think so. I don't really think
no,
so.
Are you when you say molecule, are you talking, because this is so funny, I just asked, I'm a nanny, and I just asked my five-year-old on Tuesday or Wednesday, when you look up at the sky, like just sky, you know, there's it's a flat background, so to speak, of just blue. Do you see those things moving? The molecules moving. Do you see that too?
Do you know what
I don't know what it is. Do you know what it is?
I don't know what it is. I assume it's some form of energy, but they move as you see, like atomic molecular movements on science projects or whatever. They're always there, and they're always moving, and that's in addition to the orbs and all these other beings. So
absolutely.
So part of it, you see those.
Yes. Because I asked the five-year-old, she did not see, she's like, I don't see that. And I thought all children could see until they maybe were taught not to see.
I thought so, too.
Now, she's five. In all honesty, without giving out details, of course, but her culture is India, Eastern India, and it's amazing how the whole culture is very focused on the intellect. So already, she's in kindergarten, and they're like, you got to read, you got to do math. I mean, it's a part of the culture, and I can see where her sister's 2.5 and still sees the light around my body or around other people
That's
and still
nice.
Sees things. She's
I
5.
See that. That's really great.
Yeah, but at 5, she's already starting to lose that, and it's like,
wow. Maybe if you remind her of it, like, hey.
Yeah, I do, of course, I do. And blessed be the parents know that I do, and they're okay with it, because Hindus are much more open to the metaphysical than, like, per se, a Jewish or Catholic family that I've
That's
worked
with. That's
what I've
noticed, too, in my experience with people and at work and things like that.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Especially the Buddhist philosophy. I mean, my daughter lived in an art commune when she was in art college, and there were so many Buddhist people there, and I just love their way of thinking, you know?
Oh, very compassionate beings. Very,
very compassionate. I mean, yeah, if I had to pick something, I would closely relate to that. I just think they're really awesome.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, that's like an interesting thing, because like the whole Tibetan situation, you know, from an expanded awareness was a matter of Tibetans' energy had to be, you know, we needed it throughout the world. So what looks like a negative from China becomes a benefit to the rest of the planet. That's when people are like, you know, there's no silver lining. It's like there's always a silver lining, because the only thing underneath all this illusion is love.
Exactly.
The rest is an illusion. You know, it's
exactly.
Like,
I feel the same way. And I think that about Haiti, I think it's going to become a very special place.
Yes.
You know?
Yes,
I
agree. Well, you know what I heard?
Very tragic. Oh.
What, the Tibetan thing?
No. Yes, I'm sorry about the Tibetan thing. But, I mean, I'm grateful at the same time for their sacrifice. As well, you know, bless the people of Haiti.
Yes.
Right, I was talking Haiti. But I'm an empath, and that Haitian earthquake, it just about killed me, honestly. Can you see things like that when they happen? Yeah, I'm kind of like a dog before a storm, and it's just like, oh, my goodness, you know, this is what's happening. So, yeah, that was very rough. And then
I heard it was the heart chakra blowing open. That's how it was described to me.
Uh-huh. Yes, me too.
Okay. Because I know I still to this day, a lot of me and my friends, I got this ball of energy stuck between my shoulder blades.
Really?
And I was told that that's the backside of my heart chakra, and that, you know, it's doing whatever it's going to do, but it should open, because Haiti was the opening of the heart chakra. And I was like,
I heard the same thing.
Yeah.
Are you still having that problem?
And I don't know what to do to shift it. That's why I try to just breathe and go. If I accept it, it'll move faster. That's my goal.
Daniel always told me, do the emotional freedom technique. Pull up on YouTube and use those videos, the tapping to try to get
EFT.
Blocked.
Okay. Okay. Indeed.
Yeah.
Yes. I've played with that before. Okay. Okay. Well, and I'll be honest with you. I mean, I'm uncomfortable, but it's not like I'm, you know, running to the doctor and saying, you know, dose me up on, you know, whatever it is that people, the whole painkiller, you know, because I see a
exactly.
lot of people, you know, they go through ascension symptoms and then they're drugging themselves with pharmaceuticals.
I know,
like,
and I wonder if that aborts the process. I really
do. I believe it does, especially if it's an antidepressant. Boy.
Yes.
The irony of antidepressants is it makes people want to be suicidal.
I know. I mean, well, my son Michael told me, he was out of body so much, they called so many codes on him. He said antidepressants sever your connection to the soul. It reminds me of the movie The Golden Compass. Did you see that, Nicole Kidman?
I did, yes.
And where they
took
the decision process to separate the kids from their soul. And I think that's what Paxil and all these other drugs do. And that's why
Absolutely.
People become suicidal when they're on them. So when anyone gets prescribed that, I'm like, oh, please don't take that, you know.
Yeah.
Please just try it.
Yeah.
Maybe you need to feel that pain to open up something in you. But I think it only exacerbates it and makes it so much worse, in my opinion.
I could not agree more. I mean, I could not agree more. I'm not a fan of the pharmaceuticals. And I'm not saying that, you know, if you're going to take something, A, you should never be on something for your entire life. I mean, that is just ludicrous that you'd never heal. I mean, you have to be. It's like your body is this incredible, incredible vehicle that not only has it in the program to completely rejuvenate and regenerate all by itself without any help from us,
mm-hmm.
but if you're, you know, I get that, you know, some people are on, you know, 7, 8, 9 different medications that make you go up, that make you go sideways, that make you feel this. And I'm like, there's so many synthetic frequencies in the body.
I know. I think it's very sad.
I think
do.
It is as well. I do as well.
Yeah.
I do as well. I mean, I'm like, breathe. Believe it or not, if you just breathe, everything has, there's a wisdom in the breath that, because that was one of the things the trees told me today in the woods. It was like, I see the world as being a reflection, like I am the world. And I looked and I went, if I am the world, I was looking at the trees today without the leaves, and I looked at them and I was like, you know, they almost look like capillaries. And at first I went to blood and it was, and then I went, no, it's not blood. It would be lungs because they're so oxygen reference. You know, it's like we breathe, they take our carbon dioxide and turn it into oxygen. We take their oxygen, turn it into, and I was like, oh my God. And then I saw the trees like kind of just, you know, swaying in the wind. And I was like, look at them just massage my energy, similar to how somebody might with the healing touch or one of these things that, you know, they just rub their hands over your energy field.
Yes.
It was like, it just became so clear to me that, like, I looked around in this forest, there was easily, you know, 400 trees, and that's probably a shy number, all in awareness that I was in there, and if I was out of balance, I really believe that every single tree's intention was to put me back into balance.
That's beautiful.
Like,
that's a Pandora moment.
It was, exactly. It was just, because I tell everybody I know on almost every radio show I have or on the top, just find a place, if it's not in nature, which I can't believe it's not, but if it's not, find a place where you're filled with love, with joy, with light, with compassion, not by doing anything, just because in that space that's how you feel.
Right.
Because it is the most helpful thing to go through the transition of what we are going through, a birthing process. I mean, that's what a lot of people are referencing this as. And, you know, I haven't had children, but, I mean, people can clearly see. Have you ever heard of Thomas McKinnon?
Yes.
He had a story. He had a little mini video that is kind of fascinating. He said, if you came upon a woman on a path and had never experienced childbirth before and saw a woman giving birth to a child, you would look at it and see blood. You would see the woman, you know, kind of screaming and what seems like a screeching, agonizing
scream. I've seen that, and it screams of medical emergency.
Exactly. And yet, It's a process that will take care of itself. In other words, if, you know, the people in the Aborigines, basically, they don't go to hospitals. They squat, they give birth, you know, and they take care of themselves. But meaning we really don't need these things that we think we need in order, you know, the planet was kind of doing birth before the hospitals came into awareness. And
that's
like,
exactly true.
The consciousness is going through a birth that, you know, everybody's holding their arms up going, you know, we're dying, we're dying. It's like, no, we're not, we're giving birth. Breathe! Feel the Lamaze breath and breathe!
Have you heard of the Buddha belly or anyone with that?
The Buddha belly? I say it all the time about my own belly. Is there something
that happened to both Larry and I, and we're like, oh my gosh. You know, because, I mean, there's
yes.
no getting rid of it. It's just the most amazing thing. It's just,
it is,
you know,
amazing.
This,
it
I
is
don't
the
know.
Buddha
it's
belly.
Hard,
and
it's
you know,
not,
exactly.
You too. I'm so glad. That is really, I just wonder, okay, what is this?
But at least you know what, you know what I mean? It's like, could you imagine having no insight in the sense of like, you know, you're basically Joe regular guy, you know, you work in a cubicle and,
right.
you know, you've got bills up the yin-yang and you don't know how you're going to pay for them and your wife and you have a terrible, I'm just throwing out a bad scenario. And all this is happening on top of that, you know, it's like, and you know, I can't even imagine not having my spiritual community to be with me during this time.
Absolutely. Yeah, that would be very hard. I was most fortunate because when I first started going down this awakening road, I visited Taos, New Mexico. That's where my daughter lives. And I was on the Gorge Bridge. And a shaman came up to me, and he said, do you know you have etheric energy all around you? And I'm like, yes, I see it all the time. And he's like, good for you. But we've become friends over the years, and he's done balancings, and he made medicine bags for my son, and just he's such a wonderful person. But
right.
It's just strange. I think people are placed into your life at certain places on your path because
yes.
my son met a transformational healer at just the right time he needed her. And she wouldn't charge him anything, you know, and she was always there for him. And then I met Daniel, and so I just feel like, okay, thank you so much. I have so much gratitude for everyone that has helped us along the way. But then I think when you make it to a certain point, I feel like you sort of have a responsibility to pay it forward, to help yourself, you know?
Yes.
And to help the others who don't have a clue on what's happening to their lives.
Exactly, because, you know, it's interesting, a lot of light workers, you know, judging those who are unconscious, and it's like, you know, the whole thing about being unconscious is they're unconscious, you know, yes, okay, they're unconscious, so you don't bash them, let's bring compassion to their world, and I'm not saying be a doormat for somebody that's, you know, if someone's in a physically abusive relationship or verbally, you get out. Get out, there is no love in that by showing, you know, I stay here to show them I love them. No, no, no.
I think a lot of people, though, that are light workers have a tendency to stay longer because you really want to help.
That's
what I've encountered.
Yeah, and to be honest, I think there's a lack of what you're saying almost, the awareness that when you start becoming no more victim, because I agree there's a lot of victim consciousness in light workers because they've chosen difficult paths growing up
mm-hmm.
to bring in the compassion. But at this point, it's like the compassion has to come from a state where you have the inner strength to know that, you know, let go of the story of victim and become conscious.
Yes.
You know, because it's another huge step in, you know, mastery. It's not just about, I'm not describing this well, so I'm gonna back off on what I'm saying, but I really highly recommend that. First of all, victim consciousness is there's really should be no more of it from light workers. We're in a state of frequency that absolutely supports mastery.
Yes.
Hands down. And I know, I mean, I've been through the victim consciousness, and people are like, you know, but who would I be if I didn't have my story? It's like, oh, my God, okay, who do you want to be?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, go see Avatar. Do you want to go play with the Avatars? Okay, then you can't be a victim.
Exactly.
You want to play with the orb? Then you can't be a victim. You know, it's like... And the thing is, we don't have to be a victim anymore. We're not the light workers are really not there was a time and space when we were serving at that, doing that. Where now the service really is about service to self. Take care of yourself.
I agree. Have you gone through that period where you transmuted the energies and things like that? That's very difficult to do.
It's extraordinarily difficult to do, but I've gone through most of it, and I can still feel some, like, I have some control issues. I was going through that today, actually. Control and judgment is, like, sticking to me. I'm fully aware that it's me and that my triggers are not, I'm not here to change my triggers. I'm here to change me. And I, you know, it's like, thank you, trigger, for showing me that there's still something within me that needs, you know, transmutation.
Yes, I do the same thing. A day will pop up, and I'll just think, like, I can't believe I feel this way. But you can see a light at the end of the tunnel now. Like, okay, I think that's over. And that's a big relief, to be honest, because it's just
that
so
it's the difference between wanting to live on the planet and wanting to get off, to be for me.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Because, yeah. Yeah, this is, I'm actually within 2 years, since I'm 42, my life finally took that shift where I was like, well, I am really excited to be alive. I mean, and it's funny because, you know, people are like, well, what got you through it? And it's like, there was a knowingness in me that it can't just be about this pain. It was what I experienced the good part of my life, but it couldn't be just that. It's like, because I had a sense that greatness was going to happen. And not just me doing greatness, but me experiencing greatness, like a shift in, like a quantum shift in consciousness. I mean,
I agree.
That is.
Every struggle and every obstacle you overcome brings you there, brings you closer and closer to the greater awareness. And look what how many people you're reaching with your program. I mean, what a great thing you're doing, and I'm sure you'll be rewarded for that.
Well, the reward, in all honesty, is I'm doing, you know what I mean? Meeting people like you, expressing my feelings, sharing, you know, the awareness. I mean, because people, you know, some people come on, and it's like, okay, how many listeners are, you know, and I'm like, listen, if you're looking for numbers like that, or it's just not the game I play.
Really?
And I'm like, and they'll, you know, they're contacting me, and I'm like, listen, if you're looking for a game of numbers, go to somebody that's really working that side of the. Because I was like, I don't care how many numbers. If I'm talking to two people, then let's talk me, you, and the third person. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, I feel the exact same way. That's like our website. Sometimes the hits will be phenomenal, you know. But I'm thinking, you know, if we are able to help wake up just one or two people, that's great. Yeah. You know, I'm happy that.
Exactly. Well, and it's also a matter of whoever needs to hear my message or what I'm sharing, let them find me as opposed to me exerting a tremendous amount of energy trying to find them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really, you know, what I find a lot of this marketing of spirituality. You know, it's either preying on the hopeless or, in my personal opinion, a tremendous waste of energy that, you know, change. If you want to see peace on the planet, become a peaceful person. That is, no greater gift can you give to all of the cosmos than being the change you know that most people are talking about.
Right. Be the change you want to see in the world, Gandhi.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And you know, one of my totems in my totem pole is skunk, and people are like, oh my God, how could you have skunk? And I was like, do you know what skunk is? And they're like, you know, a stinky animal. And I'm like, skunk's wisdom is about walking your talk and reputation.
I didn't know that.
Isn't that kind of, but when you think of a skunk, it clearly has a reputation.
Yeah,
and when a skunk present, and when you see a skunk, do you not hold your hands up, walk backwards, and go, you've got the floor? You know, I'm like, like, okay, if that's part of my essence and that beautiful being is sharing that with me. And here's the ironic part. In the last three places I've lived, a skunk lives under my house. I or my family or my pets, none of us get sprayed. And it
really
lives.
Ironic.
I get that, you know, there's an awareness of the interconnectedness between me and this being.
That's really nice.
Yeah. Well, similar to your interconnectedness with your son and the beings. Once you know that, there's a reverence, not a fear, not a let's trap it, kill it, and make it go away, but like, wow,
oh, exactly.
I've been selected. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that, I believe, is because one thing I'm learning from Daniel's site, which is really awesome, is that,
is.
You know, everybody on the planet is not going to one place. It's like we all kind of get to wherever our frequency is at. That's an Earth, so to speak, that we're going to. I don't even know if you're going to call it Earth, but that is a
right.
planet
it's
where
all,
we.
It's all tonal and vibrational.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that's why it's okay if the duality exists, where if you want to war, if the, you know, if you got the warrior in you and you haven't done enough of that, because they're a young soul, and so then they can go to a planet where war, you know, it's almost like the from Star Trek, the Klingons.
Mm-hmm.
They needed to war, so okay, then go war. Knock yourself out.
Yeah,
me?
I don't understand.
I'd rather float on.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, yeah. And most people believe that what happens to the Earth happens to everybody on it, and in a multidimensional experience, that is not the case.
Really?
No, because in multi dimensions, we would experience an Earth, so to speak, based on tonal frequency, light, choices that we are choosing. Because for me, I'm living. My world would be exquisite if, you know, I had complete communication and awareness of every consciousness that was, you know, on the planet. The wind, the earth, the water, the people, the everything. And,
but through
awakening
and ascension, I do feel such a connection to the earth and to everything on it, really. I don't know. It's like you feel what the earth does. It's really an amazing process.
Yeah. Linda, we are almost at the top of the hour. I want to definitely make sure that we do you have any, are you doing any other, you know, gigs or anything that, you know, anything you need to plug?
Oh, no. I'm doing a little writing, but no, just our website, benevolentspirits.com.
Okay. And I would love to have you on again. I mean, anytime, all the time, you're beautiful. You are as beautiful as your site, and I'm truly... My audience might not realize this. This was tonight me and Linda's first talk together and meeting, and, oh, huge hug to you, Linda. Huge hug to you.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. I'd love to come back again.
Oh, yes. Absolutely fabulous.
And it's been wonderful talking to you. Really, you're just a joy. Thank you so much.
Blessings. You're so welcome. I'm honored. I'll definitely be in touch. We'll book you again. And like I said, if you're comfortable too, we'll have you on for the 2 hours because
okay,
I get the feeling
cool.
Me and you, yeah, we could just, we can talk. Lots to talk about.
Yeah, we'll have a lot to talk about. It'll be fun.
Outstanding. All right, listen, everybody, benevolentspirits.com. Linda, you're a blessing. Sister, I'm so glad we have met, and we'll stay in touch. I know that with all you have a thing on Facebook as well. Do you want to plug the Facebook?
It's Larry White Buffalo, and he's on Facebook, and he tries
okay,
to put up a lot of articles all the time about ascension and the Earth's energies and all the changes. So he has a lot of interesting things on there too, and a lot
excellent.
Of the
I will look for you as well. I'm going to look for you. I'm going to connect with you on Facebook as well.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So.
Well, thank you so much, Goldie. I've enjoyed it so much.
Oh, my pleasure. Many, many blessings to you, Linda. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Whew. Okay, how fabulous was she? And now, okay, wait a minute. Let me get my other beautiful guest on. Okay, let me give an intro to, first of all, Kat, that's you, correct?
That's me.
Okay, beautiful. Okay, so earlier tonight at the top of the show, I told you this show tonight was, the synergy was about awareness. And what my second guest tonight is going to bring to our awareness is conditioning. Because I definitely, I want to talk about the spiritual aspects of your book, Afghanistan, Blood and Honor. But I really got a hit today, Kat, that it is incredibly important to talk about the Afghans as a people who are very much, from an American point of view, in my personal opinion, completely misunderstood. And I
you
would
got
like
that,
to,
right?
Yeah, and because I'm getting this hit in a huge way that, you know, once we have awareness, all the things that we that are programmed into us to make us want to fight and make us think in separateness and make us think that we need to hold on to our stuff because somebody else might come and take it. All you have to do is become aware that we are one, and all of that goes away. I mean, it really is the panacea for consciousness. It's called awareness.
Yes.
So let me introduce you. Kat Parenti Hamad, welcome to my show. It's so good to have you here.
Thank you so much, Goldie. I'm honored to be on your show. And yes, Goldie, I did spend 20 minutes writing down all of the spiritual aspects of my book just for you.
Listen, you're going to be on again anyway. So, but of course, me and Kat are kind of joking about it because I was so adamant that, you know, Kat, because I started reading her book and it was like it was talking a lot about the culture. And I was like, I don't know if my show is going to want, you know, how do I fit this into a metaphysical show? And of course, today in the woods, all of it, the awareness came rushing into me. And it was like, oh, wow, you know, how do you fit it in? It's called life, Goldie. Fit life in as it effortlessly shows up for you to do so. So I love you. I do want to talk about the metaphysical, but I want you share the beautiful country and love that you have for this country. Because I think the propaganda that most Americans have, it's nowhere near what the truth is.
Yes, and I was interviewed earlier today by a local newspaper, and this is exactly the same stuff that came up.
Really?
Yes, about the culture and, you know, is it true that everything that we see on television, that they're killers and murderers and wife beaters and bailers, and, you know, is this who the Afghan people are? This is exactly what came up today.
Interesting. So awareness is awareness wants to be felt and expressed. And
yes.
You know what I'm saying? It's almost like the consciousness is doing it for us because I got it. The gentleman interviewing you or woman interviewing you earlier got it. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, who am I? Right. Okay. So let's start with the book. Okay. Afghanistan, Blood and Honor, a memoir from Brooklyn to Kabul. Okay. So tell me about how you got into Afghanistan, you know, what brought you there, and you know, I don't even know how to begin, so help me here.
No problem.
Thank
okay.
you, Will.
So now we're going to hit on the spiritual immediately.
Okay.
When I was 3 years old, I was born in Brooklyn, New York. When I was 3 years old, I used to go down, we lived in a big apartment building with 48 other families, and when I was 3, my mom let me go downstairs to play with the whole pack of other kids.
Okay.
And we'd be playing tag, stickball, whatever.
Right.
And all of a sudden, I would be drawn to the two gardens that flanked the front door. And in the gardens were like young trees and chrysanthemum bushes, etc. But there were also two stone flower pots, one on each side of the main door that kind of like flanked the doors. And I would wander over there to one of them and put grass and leaves, and I'd start stirring it with a stick, pretending I was cooking. Now, I'm 3 years old, guys. All of a sudden, it was like I was in a movie, Goldie. A curtain would come down in front of my face, you know, from like the top to the bottom of my vision, and I would be standing on this golden-colored plain with the purplish-brown mountains in the distance. and I'm 14 years old. I have a black and red dress on with all kinds of silver all over it, and I'm actually stirring a metal pot over a fire with food in it with a big wooden spoon the size of a yardstick.
So is this a past life recall or a multidimensional
yes.
experience?
Well,
or see all of the above.
All of the above. I mean, first of all, you're 3 years old, so you're not thinking about that, right?
Right.
You're just
right.
watching the movie, right?
Okay.
And then I would hear my mother's voice start calling me. And I knew that that was my mother, and I knew I had to go back. I didn't want to, but I knew I had to go back. So I'd return to my body. Again, I'm three. I don't know what I'm doing. I hear my mother's voice. Okay, time to go. This scene repeated itself until I was 5 years old, and I completely lost interest in playing the flower pot game. Right?
Okay.
You grow up, right? Okay.
Right. You grow human is really, right.
The next thing is from 8 to about 13 on Halloween, I always wanted to be and was dressed as a gypsy. Okay. This is good. 13 years old, I start having a recurring dream. The same dream over and over and over. I'm in a foreign land. I'm married to a very tall man with kind of darkish skin. This is my husband. His country is at war, and I'm helping him.
Oh, wow. Okay.
16, I go into Manhattan with my girlfriend. We go shopping. And we're about to come back and get on the subway and go back to Brooklyn. I pass a storefront of palm readers, gypsies.
Okay.
So my girlfriend and I look at each other and we're like, hey, let's go in there and get our palms read. And I'm like, oh boy, the gypsies, yay! The minute I set foot into the shop, the entire energy that's been around me since I'm 8 years old just goes dwindling down, boom, boom, goes down to the ground. It disappears, and I know these are not the people. The gypsies that I thought are not the gypsies that I want.
Okay.
And I go and I do a research paper on the gypsies, and I find out that there are two groups. One originally is from India, and the other is somewhere in North Africa. So I do research on these people, and I realize that, you know, the people that I'm seeing, this is not it. Okay. Then we go along. Well, you know what? Let me break this off right here. Let's get into your question about the people of Afghanistan.
Okay.
I can tell you one thing, Goldie, as sure as I'm living, Goldie, when I would walk those streets. Now, first, listeners, you have to understand, I was there from the late 60s to the early 90s. So I saw the peace. I saw the peace with the king. I saw when his brother-in-law took over in a bloodless coup and became president. I saw it start to change. The people start to change. I saw the people become fearful. I saw when the Soviets came in and the people were even more fearful. And then when the full-blown invasion of the Soviets was, I saw that. I saw the ultimate murders, mayhem, everything else. And I saw the rise of the Taliban. Okay, so let's go back to the time of the king in the late 60s.
Okay.
At that time, you could count the number of foreigners on your hand, not including Peace Corps and embassy people. But that still was a very, very small group, Goldie.
Okay, right.
Okay, so foreigners like myself who have been drawn to go to Afghanistan since they're 3 years old. So I get to Afghanistan, I hitchhike from England over to Afghanistan, traveling with different people,
wow.
And I get to Afghanistan, and before I enter Afghanistan, I just enter the border, I cross the border into Afghanistan, we stopped to, like, you know, get water, refresh ourselves, whatever. I drop down on my knees and I say, thank God I have come home, and wonder where the hell that came from. You know?
But you trusted it. You didn't know, but you trusted it, right?
I mean, trusted it. Yes.
I tell people all the time, trust those crazy things that you don't know where they're coming from. Just trust them. Okay?
Just go
okay,
forward.
Continue.
Okay,
yeah.
So I get there. I have this feeling. I'm wondering what's going on here. Okay, these people, this is a classic example of who the Afghan really is.
Okay.
You're walking in a bazaar. You've got 50 to 500 people walking in the bazaar doing whatever, blah, 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 blah. The minute you enter the bazaar, everything stops, and they all turn around en masse and just look, and then they turn back to what they're doing.
Oh, wow.
That is because your energy is different from theirs. They didn't see your face. They felt you. The whole culture was based on these feelings. When I would be brought home by the men, because the men are in the outer world of the bazaar, the women are in the inner world. Now, you have to understand something here. When I say outer and inner, I'm not speaking as a Western woman, and I'm not speaking disrespectfully in any way. The culture was divided into outer and inner. And you have to remember, Goldie, that these people lived as they did in biblical times.
Okay, so what exactly, what does inner and outer, what is that a reference of then?
The reference is the man is the ruler in the bazaar and the woman is the ruler in the home.
Okay, okay, okay.
Okay, so I'd be in the bazaars. And the men, you know, I do business with a merchant. I'd buy stuff, whatever, blah, 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 because I had a handicrafts business. I was buying from Afghanistan. I was selling to museums and museum shops along the east coast of the United States.
Okay.
All right, so I'm living 6 months in Kabul and 6 months in New York. Okay?
Okay.
All right, so I go and, you know, just say Muhammad Ali or whatever, and I go to Muhammad Ali shop. And I buy rugs or dresses or whatever, jewelry, whatever I buy. And, of course, when you go into these shops, it's not like here. You go into the shop to say, hello, how are you? Fine. May I help you? Yes. I'd like to get a black dress size 8. Oh, okay, fine. Here's the black dresses. If you need any help, call me. No, it's not like that.
Okay.
It's like you're entering into someone's home. So first you must do the greeting simultaneously in their language, which I learned just by being there.
Okay.
And you greet one another simultaneously. May you never be tired. How are you? How is your family? Is everything going well? What is the good news you have for me? May peace be upon thee. This is first and foremost. You go through this.
And that's, and, you know, I want to bring out to everybody listening, the depth in which that greeting is so much more, you know, we are spiritually corrupt. Forget corrupt. We are almost spiritually extinct in this country as a culture. I'm not in pockets, but as a culture, when people say, how are you? And then the answer is fine. Truth be told, the person asked doesn't really give a flying how you are. And the answer and response of fine has nothing to do with actually how they are feeling.
That's correct.
And because I want it to be known that the judging we do, this is another thing I got through awareness, the judging we do of other is really bringing about self. What is it about self that I see in the other?
That
so
is correct.
Please continue. Yeah.
That is correct. So the richness of the culture is right there in the first words before you even take another breath. Then.
And do they care if you're, did they care that you were not Afghanistan?
Absolutely not. They don't care what you are, who you are, what size you are, how much money you have, how fat you are, how skinny you are. They don't care. You are their guest.
Wow.
This is one of the great laws of Afghanistan. Anyone can, now again, I'm talking about the peaceful times. I'm not talking about Taliban.
Okay. Okay.
Peaceful
I appreciate
time.
You being, okay. Yep. Okay.
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 Yeah. Don't want to give people the wrong idea here.
Okay.
At that time, any human being could knock on any other human being's door and would be taken in and fed for 3 days, Goldie. That is the first great law of Afghanistan, Melmastia. At the end of the third day, if you had business, with the household members, you would say, yes, you know, da-da-da, this and that, I'm a merchant, I'm this, I'm that. Or you would thank them and go on your way.
Wow.
Uh-huh. How many
sounds
doors?
Pretty beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah,
how many? I mean, I live in Fairfield County. Are you kidding me? Nobody opens their doors to anybody. Wow. Yeah.
All right.
Now, when you say that's an Afghan law, what do you mean by that? It's a law. I mean, an actual, like, that is the law of the land?
Of the culture of Afghanistan. It
wow.
is the law of Pashtun Wali. You have to realize that the Pashtuns are the largest group of Afghans, and these are the laws of Pashtun Wali, which are practiced in Afghanistan. Even though they had a king, even though they had a president, they are ruled by their own cultural tribal laws. That's why there's so much difficulty going over there to try to do anything, because you're not dealing with a centralized government. Okay, President Karzai, we're coming over here. We want to do this, that, and the other. Okay, go right ahead and do it. Well, that's fine and dandy. However, when you get into the local area, the city, the town, the village, and you've got these people operating off laws that are thousands of years old, Karzai doesn't sit you down and tell you this. So you got a problem right off.
Right, right.
See what I mean?
No, but I would imagine also that they could be taken advantage of. I realize that's an American, you know, my American culture is immediately going, God, I can imagine them being really treated badly because of their kindness of this law.
Yes, and you know that the Afghans have a saying that they carry out to the letter.
Okay.
If an Afghan loves you, they will do anything for you, even lay down their lives. And if an Afghan hates you, they will do anything to you.
Okay. Okay, so they're a passionate culture.
Yeah, there you go.
And I honor passion. I honor passion because I'm a passionate person myself. So. Exactly.
Yeah, I always tell people.
Exactly.
I always tell people.
You can't have the pendulum not swing both ways. It's the way
right
it
on.
Works.
Right on.
Exactly.
They're
exactly.
not pasties, believe me.
Okay. Okay.
I always tell people my daughter is half Afghan and half Italian. Can you imagine two more volatile cultures?
May she find peace.
Yeah, exactly.
Indeed. Wow. Oh, okay.
Oh my God.
Okay, so let's
go back to the merchant. So we go to the shop and we say this greeting to each other, and then we sit down. And then we have tea, and it is obligatory that you have 3 cups of tea with anyone.
Okay.
To show generosity of the host, to show honor to the guest. This is the reason you drink tea together. They don't drink coffee there, guys. They drink tea.
Okay.
And they don't drink alcohol there either.
They don't drink
okay.
alcohol? Really?
No, they don't. Now.
Huh.
I'm going to bring up a very taboo subject. Somebody may get shocked and fall off the phone. When
this
I was there
do.
In the late... Huh?
This is what my show is about, though. Rock and roll, Cat. Go.
Okay. In the late 60s and early 70s, hashish was legal. And people smoked hashish together.
Okay.
It was treated like the 5 o'clock cocktail in the United States.
Okay.
It, yes,
and this is one of this is grown locally, right? This is why.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's what they got the weather for it. They've got the climate, you know, and they got the know-how to know it feels good when you're smoking it. So why not?
Why not? That was their alcohol, so to speak.
Exactly. Right. And thank you for bringing that up for anybody
yes.
that wants to judge the hashish as being one thing, and as
yes.
they sit there with their martinis. So indeed. Indeed.
There you go. Absolutely.
Indeed.
And it was not abused by the Afghans. Now, there were some foreigners, some people called them hippies, that did abuse it, and they tried to take the stuff out of the country, and they were jailed for that.
Okay.
All right. So back to the merchant. So you go to the merchant, you're having the tea, you must have the 3 cups of tea, that's obligatory. Then he asks you if you've had meat. That means, are you hungry?
Okay.
And of course you're going to say yes. I mean, you'd be an idiot to say no. And then he will make sure that you are fed. And only after maybe 1 or 2 hours has elapsed will you get around to doing any kind of business. But first he's going to take your history. Who's your dad? Where are you from? Who's your mom? How many brothers, sisters, uncles, grandmothers? And when he finds out that I am alone and I am a woman, oh, you must come home and live with me and my family.
Wow. And you haven't even bought a single thing from his merchandise.
That's right, dear. Has nothing to do with money. So I would get taken. This is how I learned the culture. I got taken into people's homes. And I lived with them.
The culture, exactly. Wow.
And, okay, and this was like the another very best part. So he'd take me home. At the end of the day, I'd go back to his shop and we'd meet, or maybe I came at close to the end of the day that he was closing up. So we'd go home together, and he'd open the door, and there in front of me would be his wife, then all his sisters and sisters-in-law, and the mother and the father and the grandparents and the uncles, the aunts, the whole crew. They were all standing there. And the wife would come within 5 inches of my face, and she'd look into my eyes for 5 seconds, and she'd throw her arms up and around me and say, "Sister."
Oh, wow.
And that's how I lived with them.
Now, did they speak English?
No. I spoke Dari and a little bit of Pashto.
Oh,
I learned it from the merchants. Yes,
you learned it by being in the country? Because I always say the easiest way to learn a language, live in the country and you'll learn the language, you know, as opposed to, the Rosetta.
Just trying to get a book. Right,
yeah,
to go to school.
Exactly.
All right.
Okay.
Check this out.
So no jealousy if a male merchant brought you home from the wife or
no.
Wow.
I was in, remember the first law of Afghanistan, I am an honored guest. Number one. Number two, she calls me sister. She doesn't call me Kat Parenti Hamad. She calls me sister, so she takes me into the bosom of the family. You know what one of the words for sister is?
What?
Amshir Jan. You know what that means, Goldie dear? That means the wife who shares my mother's milk.
Wow.
You want to know beauty? You want to know this culture? There you go.
Wow. And this has literally been taught for thousands of years.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
You know, wow. I mean, you know, they're not showing that on 7 o'clock Eyewitness News. They're really not.
You missed that,
I mean, they're not
huh?
showing that. They're not showing that in Time Magazine. It's like, you know, people are so naive to, they think they know. But they're just literally regurgitating what they've been told.
That's correct, my dear. This
yeah.
is why it is so important for me to get my book into the hands of readers. And what I want them to do, Goldie, all you listeners out there, what I want you to do is read my book and then donate my book to an organization called Books for Soldiers so we can educate the military and non-military personnel in Afghanistan. They'll understand how to work with the Afghans better. They'll be able to prevent troop loss. We'll be able to bring our people home sooner with leaving a lasting legacy of peace.
Wow.
That's my goal, sweetie.
No, and I'm here to support that, babe. I'm here
Thank
to support
you,
that. I'm here. Oh, my. Listen. the time right now in consciousness, we are so ripe for becoming a body of consciousness instead of a physical body. You know what I mean?
Yes.
We're already consciousness. Now let's start looking at, you know, no more boundaries. I've had visions where passports are no more. This isn't just about the veils of consciousness being dissolved or, you know, pulled back, however you want to term it, because what happens in consciousness is going to be reflected on the planet.
That's right. And
this is within our lifetime, I believe that, because I've always had the desire to travel, and I can tell you, as I got older, I sense my own fear of it, and I sense that my fear is really propagated, so to speak. You know, it's like, because I'm like, I want to know Africa. I want to know Egypt. I want to know, I mean, there's something about the Middle East that three major religions are all going cuckoo bird over this land. I mean,
right.
You want to know about that kind of stuff as a conscious person. You know, it's like, I know land that has energy that's just, you know, going through it, and yet there's a sense in me, and I believe this is why we're having this conversation right now, there is a sense of me of like, it can't be true. I, in other words, because I've never talked to anybody that was from Afghanistan. I've never,
okay.
You know, and I'm not saying that they're not in this country. It's just I've never had our dance has
the
not come up.
Yeah,
the opportunity. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because I remember when I used to not understand Eastern Indian India.
Yes.
And now I nanny for a family from Eastern India, and it's like, we have so much in common with the whole spiritual concept, and
being a
Muslim has very spiritually, you know, they believe in reincarnation and blah, 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 but meaning, you know, if you look for the beauty and for the sameness, you'll find it. If you look for the differences, you'll find that. But all we have to do is start looking for the sameness. And, God, this culture, because I've always had a sense, though, that a mother loves her child. I don't care what culture you're grown in. A mother loves a child the same way in every land. And nobody wants to see our kids dying from war. Nobody wants to see that.
That's right. That's absolutely correct.
And yet our government says, you know, because they totally push the whole, you know, when they're killing themselves on purpose. I don't know. There was a name in the world.
Suicide bombers.
Exactly.
Suicide bombers.
As if they're all, you know, listen, you know, we all want to die. And it's like, nobody wants to die. I'm not saying you have to be afraid of death, but nobody consciously wakes up and goes, I want to die today. I'm sorry, I don't believe that.
Yeah.
Not as a culture, you know.
All right, well, now that's a, you know, that's a whole other subject.
Okay, got me all wound up here, man.
I know this.
Sorry. It's a passion.
What?
Okay, so so tell us more. Tell us how, what is the difference between Afghan in peaceful times and Afghan in not peaceful times?
Well, the first thing that anyone has to understand is the fact that the Taliban or the suicide bombers, whatever.
Right.
I mean, I'm not every Taliban is a suicide bomber, not every suicide bomber is Taliban, but just say these people are a very, very, very small group of people within what they call the religion of Islam. Okay?
Okay.
Actually, their actions have nothing to do with the Islamic religion. Muhammad, and this is in my book, said, no one should be hurt by the tongue or the hand. Now, that's their own prophet. So you can see how far they have strayed. The best comparison that I could make with the Taliban are Christian people in our country who believe that it is a good thing to kill doctors who do abortions.
Absolutely. Yeah, clearly we have extremists in our culture if not more so. I mean, we have exact. Because what was the guy? Koresh. Remember Koresh and his whole distorted.
David Koresh, yes, in Waco, yes.
Exactly. There's a perfect example of American distortion of the rules or the laws that Jesus brought in and how they can get distorted. I mean, come on, people. Don't tell me that there's not distortion happening here. Don't be so blind. So, okay, so there's distortion in every culture. We got to accept
that.
That's the truth. Exactly.
That's the
okay.
truth.
Indeed.
So,
indeed.
Unfortunately, what we have done in the West is label every Afghan either Al Qaeda or a suicide bomber.
Absolutely.
And that's what the media portrays.
Well, and it's so funny because after what we just said, that would be like people looking at Americans as if we're David Koresh followers.
Right. Absolutely.
Look at how this distortion of that is.
Isn't that amazing?
Well, that's profound, babe. That's profound.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So bring us more wisdom. Share the light of these beautiful people with us.
All right. Okay, so the word for sister that we were talking about is Amshirjan, which is one of the main languages of Afghanistan called Dari, D-A-R-I. Some people call it Farsi, but technically it's not. Farsi is modern Persian spoken in Iran. Dari, D-A-R-I, is ancient Persian spoken in Afghanistan.
Okay.
The other main language, there are several main languages, the other main language that I'm familiar with is Pashto, spoken by the Pashtuns. So Amshirjan is the word for sister in Dari, and here's the word for sister in Pashto. Hur.
Huh?
Now what does that sound like, Goldie? Come on, what's it sound like?
It sounds like whore.
That's right, doesn't it? Okay, now check this out.
Okay.
Here I am. I'm living with a Pashtun family, and everybody's telling me what their names are, you know, dee-da-dee-da-dee. And I turned, and I said to the father, I looked and said, what is your wife's name? And now, she didn't speak in English. Most of the kids spoke English, but she didn't speak in English. So I said to the father, what is your wife's name? And he looked at me, and he smiled very tenderly, and he said, you may call her Hur. And mentally I said, not on your life, buddy.
Exactly. I mean, I'm sure it threw you back like it just threw me back. Exactly. But right,
well,
see, this is where other cult, because that's our word, that's clearly, it sounds alike, but this is a whole new language. Okay, indeed.
All right. Okay, but wait a minute. It gets much deeper than that, girlfriend.
Okay.
Check this out. So he smiles very tenderly at me. When I just looked at him, and I said, and what does that mean in English? And he looked at me, and he smiled, and he said, it means sister. Okay. All right. Now, check this out. Just follow this along here.
Okay.
When these people get married, now I'm not talking about modern Afghans who are going to wear the white dress and the guy's going to wear the tux, da-da-dee-da-da. I'm talking about the culture that I knew, okay?
Okay.
When they get married, Goldie, the man wears white. The woman wears a red dress and green pantaloons. Now, if you take our culture, let's switch. Let's go to the American culture. Let's go back into late 1800s, early 1900s. If a woman wore red, what was she?
She was a lady of the night.
That's right, dear. Okay.
Right.
She was a whore. Yes, dear.
Right.
Okay. So here's...
You speak your truth, young lady. I love it. It's good.
Okay. So here's my question, Goldie, dear, for all of the listeners. How did the most revered word in that culture, sister, become the most reviled word in our culture. How did the beautiful red dress of the bride become the red dress of the prostitute in our culture?
Okay, I'm going to take this is a guess, but is this the Mary Magdalene Bridge here?
Why not?
It is, isn't
Why
it?
Why not?
Because as soon as you said the word, I went, oh, my God, that's where it came up that she was the whore.
That's right. Exactly. This is
wow.
how we, the patriarchy, has twisted this stuff.
Right. Exactly. Which I think started as far back as, you know, Romans and in that whole period. I mean, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Or even farther back than that.
Or even farther back than that. Exactly. Exactly.
Right. Exactly. Now, let me draw you guys a picture of the Afghan husband and the Afghan wife. And again, I lived in all stratas of society, and I lived with them during wartime. Now, I'm not talking Taliban people, okay?
Okay.
I'm talking wartime when the Soviets were there and they were fighting the Soviets, okay? I actually lived with a man who became one of the chief Taliban commanders in Afghanistan. He's still very active today, Jalaluddin Haqqani. I actually lived with him and his family for maybe a couple of days a week. Okay. Anyway, that's the third book. Let's keep with the first book.
I was going to say that you're going to have to come back. That'd be interesting to know because you clearly know these. Well, only because you know these as people, not as
people.
Right? Because as people, okay. But indeed, that's the third book, and please continue because we have plenty to talk about the first book. So.
Okay. All right, so we're in the first book here, and I'm going to just draw you a little picture, okay?
Okay.
So the Afghan man brings me home. His wife calls me sister, blah, blah, blah. I'm hanging around. Of course, they give me tea, naturally, and we're sitting there, and their idea of snacks are things like roasted chickpeas, raw almonds, raisins. I mean, this is the stuff people eat as snacks. They don't eat chocolate, candy. They don't know from that stuff.
Well, they don't eat processed food. It's like what they grow is, you know, it's
That's
a more
it.
Simpler food. Right, right.
Basic food. All
right,
so I'm sitting around and I'm watching this whole thing. And the woman truly is the ruler of the house. She's bustling around. She's giving orders. This one do this, that one do that. She's telling the kids what to do, not do. She's giving them a whack on the rear end if they need it.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy, real normal stuff. And
exactly.
the guy is sitting there, and the little kids, you know, the one-year-old or the eight-month-old or whatever, he's got them, and they're climbing all over him, pulling his beard, taking his turban off, you know, the whole trip. And he's just in seventh heaven with all these kids climbing all over him. And
so he's very much in touch with the children, though, especially at that young age.
And very much in touch with his feminine side as she is in touch with her masculine side.
Oh, good point, Kat. Good point.
Mm-hmm.
Balance.
That's why I love these people so much, because they had a good balance of the masculine and the feminine.
Huh.
And then, okay, dinner's ready now, right?
Okay.
So we're going to go to the table. Now, the table is not a table like you and I would sit at. It's the carpet's on the floor, the pillow's on the floor, and then they put a cloth down. Usually it's leather because it'll absorb spills.
Okay.
Put a leather cloth down. They bring out the food, the tureens of food, the platters, blah, 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 blah. Now, here's the trip. The majority of books written on Afghanistan are by men. And there's nothing wrong in that.
Right.
But they never got to see what I saw. Because if a man is brought home by a merchant, he will be put in the Maimon Hona, which means the guest house, which is attached to the house. But he never mingles with the women of the house. He is served by the men, he is seen by the men, he is joked with by the men, he is cared for by the men, he is talked to by the men, all his comforts are seen to by the men. However, since I was a woman, I got to live inside the house with the women. So here's the deal that goes down. Okay, so the table is, you're sitting cross-legged on the floor, basically.
Is there a table, or it's really just
on
the floor?
Cloth on the carpet. Cloth on the carpet. And no
cloth
shoes are ever, and no shoes are ever worn in the house. Never.
Okay.
That's very disrespectful. Okay.
Really? Okay.
Oh, yeah. To bring the filth of the street into the home is very disrespectful, their belief system.
Gotcha.
Is.
Okay.
So just pretend we're sitting at the table is the floor, but, we're sitting around it just like it's a table, only we're sitting cross.
Okay,
right?
Indeed. And you can reference it as a table from this point forward, and there's no correction necessary. Understood.
Cool.
Yeah.
The wife sits at the head of the table, and I sit at her right hand, and she puts food into my mouth with her right hand. This is the honor to the guest. The husband does not sit at the other end of the table. He sits to the side, and he does not speak unless spoken to. And this is not disrespect. It is the woman is the queen and the ruler of the house. Her sons do all the serving and the cleaning up because her daughters have done the cooking.
Okay, so wait a minute. So, because if I'm correct, everybody in, well, not, let me just speak for myself. I have always had the vision that men were, like, really brutal to the women over there. Like, just totally treating them as second-class citizens. That seems to be, and when I say over there, I'm talking about the whole Middle East. I am clearly naive because I know nothing, and what I do know is just ugly. It's just ugly. And it's not even truth. It's just what I've been told. Because is Afghanistan where they wear the women can't show the face in public?
Yes, and in Saudi Arabia, and in the Gulf states, and in a lot of Middle East.
Okay, so help me understand. What's the culture around that?
Okay, let me talk about Afghanistan because that's what I know. Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. What I will say is that some of the Middle Eastern countries, before I get to Afghanistan, are very, 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 very fundamentalist. Okay? And that's where all the veilings and blah, 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 this and that and this and that.
So that's their religion, in other words.
No, it really isn't, because if you study the Quran, Muhammad says that a woman must be dressed modestly. There is no place in the Quran that says her face has to be covered. No place, Goldie.
Right.
It's modesty. The Afghan women used to wear, a dress, and the sleeve came down to just a little bit past the elbow. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
And it was a scoop neck,
Yeah.
And they had the pantaloons,
Yeah.
But they had like a head scarf that lay very loosely over the hair, like you see in the old movies, like Ava Gardner and those people, They just have
the
scarf.
Yeah, that
kind of thing. Not even tied, just thrown over one shoulder.
Yeah.
Like that is the traditional costume of the women of Afghanistan. Now, let me explain what I understood from living there about the veil. Again, I'm going back to the time of the king. I'm not going to the Taliban, which was a very, very
good
thing.
Listen, this is show one. This is exactly, you're doing it, because we'll get to the, even if it's on another show.
Yes.
Let's do this. And I'm liking this, because tonight it's about awareness that it is a loving society. Let's know that.
Very much.
Let's know that the whole planet is a loving society when we truly get to know it, because I think that's what the awareness is lacking. So,
that is correct.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so what we've got here is we're going to talk about the veil. Now, this is the way I learned about it and saw it when I was there back in the late 60s, early 70s, mid 70s. First of all, every girl wanted to have a veil. So you'd say, well, why in the name of God would you want that? Because it was the same thing as American girls wanting brassieres. When an American girl wears a brassiere, it shows she's going through puberty, and she's going to become a woman.
Okay.
When an Afghan girl wears a veil, it shows that she's going or gone through puberty, and she is of marriageable age.
Okay.
Got it?
Yep.
All right. Okay. So the veil was worn by different types of people. The nobility, they did not wear the veil. They wore the Ava Gardner headscarf and the sunglasses. Okay?
Okay.
That's the nobility. That's probably about 2 or 3% of your population.
Okay.
Then you have the merchant class, which is a good chunk of your population, but still comparatively small.
Okay.
These women wore the veil when they left the confines of their houses to go into the public streets and or the bazaars. And when they got where they were going, they went to Goldie's shop on Main Street. They came into the shop, they threw off the veil, conducted their business with Goldie and whomsoever, and then when they went out on the street, they put the veil back down again.
Okay, so it's just in public, essentially.
Right on, my dear.
Okay.
And the reason the merchant women wore the veils is because it distinguished them from the rest of the population, which was the majority, which was the agriculturalists, which did not wear a veil. Can you imagine trying to grow food with a veil on your face? Forget it.
I mean, so, from a personal perspective, I can't imagine doing a lot of things with a veil on my face. So I'm in honor of these women, as that was such a revered part of the culture, you know, because it's been painted a picture that, you know, of course, it's all about the brutal humiliation.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? It's been so
yes.
distorted.
Yes, that's the Taliban. They're correct. It was brutal and humiliating. You're absolutely
okay.
correct. But that's
huh.
not where I lived and who I lived with. Otherwise, I would hate that place and I would never stay there for more than a week. I lived
it's
there
hard.
On and off for 20 years.
Right.
And I would never marry a man from that culture, which I did, you know, in order
yeah,
to have
exactly.
this kind of experience. My
yeah,
God.
Exactly.
I
yeah,
mean, you know, maybe some people are sadists and masochists, but I'm not one of them, trust me.
Okay. You don't get. Tell us what you really think.
Yeah, right. Don't hold back.
Don't hold back. You're so from Brooklyn, though. You realize you can take the girl out of Brooklyn, but Brooklyn always stays. My parents are from Brooklyn. That's why I get this.
Oh,
I get this. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, so we only got 13 minutes left, so I want to stay focused, and because I think it's really important to you know, just break the tyranny of thinking that all veils are negative. I mean, okay, so there was a point in time when the veil was negative with the Taliban, but that was not the case of the merchants in the 70s. It was revered upon. I mean, we're
right.
getting, you know, that's really important because it's just, how do I put this? It's the twistedness of governments that
yep.
want to control, whether it be oil or stargates
yep.
or whatever is going on in these countries. It just, you know, talking to someone like yourself who has actually lived there, and not lived there for 3 months on a sabbatical with, you know, the Peace Corps, but lived in the culture, as the culture, with the culture, actually becoming the culture. It really is like an uncensored broadcast of what actually happens in the culture.
That is correct.
That's the beauty of, you know, and it's okay to share it from the bias that you love it, because, you know, I think it would balance out the scales a little. We don't really have a lot of people sharing it from that, you know, from that space. Bring it
yes.
on. Bring on the love of any culture, of any
yes.
culture.
Yes.
I love this. I love this. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing.
Okay.
Okay. So.
All right. Go ahead. If you got any questions, ask.
Okay, so, well, we got a few minutes. Tell me about how you met your husband, and because there was also some wonderful synchronicities going on with that. Correct.
Okay. Will do. Okay, so that's the time I'm 13 until I'm in my 20s. I have the recurring dream, the very tall man, kind of dark skin, the mustache, blah, 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 whatever. And I'm married to him, and I'm in his country living there, and I'm helping him with the war. Okay. So I am subconsciously drawn to Afghanistan from age 3. Finally get the opportunity to go there, as I said, cross the border, fall on my knees, thank God I've come home. I fit right into the culture. And one night, this is another little visual here. Okay, I'm sure people listening have seen the adobe homes of the Native Americans.
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
Or New Mexico. I mean, they're still very popular. Yep,
Okay, yep. This is the houses of the Afghans. They lived in these adobe homes. All right, so even the capital, Kabul, is basically a bunch of adobe homes. Now, in the middle of this, of these adobe homes, with people on foot, with people dressed biblically, with people living biblically, with about a handful of cars in the capital, like maybe 6 in the whole freaking capital, plus donkeys, plus horses, most people on feet, some bicycles. Now, right in the middle of that, Goldie, I want you to put a 1970 discotheque.
Well, okay, you know, the world was spreading disco like it was fire.
Wow, for real?
For real. There was one in the
world. What was it called?
It was called the 25-Hour Club.
25-Hour Club. Very interesting.
They don't work 24 hours. They work 25 hours.
See, that's the magic of Afghanistan. You get to dance that extra hour when you're with us. Wow.
You
bet. So there's a disco. Okay. I mean, that's... was this American? The disco, was it... or was it Afghanistan people?
An Afghan guy from the nobility went to the United States, studied in the university, came back and opened up a discotheque.
Wow.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, there was naturally, who's going to frequent this? A handful of foreigners and a handful of Afghan businessmen. Nobody else would frequent these places.
Oh, right.
Okay. Now,
well, let me ask a question, though. Would it be against the culture of the others, or it's just that it's not something they would know to frequent because it's not something they've ever encountered before?
Both. It
okay.
is against the culture to have strange men, meaning not related, strange men and strange women, not related, together dancing and consuming alcohol. Forget it. Okay?
Right.
Got the picture?
Right. Okay.
Now,
yeah.
I went to... backtrack a little bit. I went to some fabulous parties where there were men, there were women, there was hashish going around, there was eating, there was drinking, but these were in private homes, okay?
Okay.
But to have this in a public place is, forget it. Okay, so back to the story.
Okay.
So I occasionally would go to the club when it was boring and they pulled in the sidewalks at 6 o'clock at night. There was nothing to do. Sometimes people would visit me. More often, I was invited to Afghan homes to eat with them and joke and laugh and sing and have a great time. But there were times when there was nothing to do, so I would wander over to the 25-hour club. And there was a group of about 5 or 6 foreigners that we all knew each other on a first-name basis. So I go in there one night, and I'm immediately drawn to a figure sitting with his back to me at the bar. They have to understand, the club only had a little red exit bulb for a light, so it was very dark. The tables had little tiny candles on snow-white tablecloths, big enough for 2 or 4 people. So a bunch of my friends, 5 other people besides myself in Afghanistan that were doing export-import, put the tables together, and they're all having wine, and they're smoking hashish, and da-da-da-da-da. Oh, my God, come on. So I sit down. I'm doing the same thing, but that figure at the bar with his back to me, I've got to figure out who this is because the energy coming from that person is so powerful and so intense. So I'm trying to figure out, what do? Go up, tap the guy on the shoulder and say, hey? No,
right,
don't
right.
think so. So the music.
Well, you are in the 25-hour club, so it's already different. Exactly.
So I'm thinking about this, and all of a sudden, somebody else comes from the bar, and he's a man that I've seen in the city, and we know each other on a first-name basis, hello. And he asks me to dance. Oh, okay. So I get up and I dance with him, and I'm thinking, okay, now this is good, because if he goes back to the bar, I'll go with him, and I'll get a look at this other guy, right?
Right.
Dance finishes. He puts his arm around my waist, and he says, I have a friend of mine who wants to meet you. And I thought, oh, boy. So I go up to the bar, and this man is still with his back to me, and the German guy looks at me, and he says, Miss Kathy Parenti, I would like to present Sabzada Jamal Mahmoud Yusuf Khan. So I hear this name, and I spiel off in Dari, one of the main languages, you know, the greeting, how are you, blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
So this guy gets up. He's about 6'3". He's absolutely gorgeous, drop-dead gorgeous. And he looks down the end of his nose at me, and he says, in this thick British accent, Madam, I am not a car bully, which means I'm not from Kabul. Well, nothing ever stops me. I'm from Brooklyn, right?
Exactly.
I look at the guy and I say, well, I greet everyone I meet in Afghanistan in that manner. And he says,
oh, okay.
Okay, and we both sit down. And he says, you know, would you care for something to drink? Okay, fine, so get a glass of wine. And the tension between us is unbelievable. And then he says to me, you know, would you like to dance? And we start dancing, and he starts telling me his history. And then we get back to the bar, and he says, would you care for a Dunhill? Now, I'm not a smoker. So Dunhill, you know, cigarettes don't mean much to me. Now, this is an English brand.
Okay.
So I said, a Dunhill? I said, now, you know, what is that? And he says, huh, not brought up in the proper manner.
The British are so proper. God, they are. And that's, you know, and I guess that that's probably also, you know, just, but they really are proper people. I mean, they just,
But this guy, he's an Afghan prince who was educated in India. So that's where the British accent, and that's why he doesn't speak Dari.
Oh.
Is that a kick in the pants or what?
Because I was going to say, I thought you did marry an Afghan. That was a little confusing.
That's him.
Okay.
So
he's Afghan, but he's not even acknowledging his Afghan.
That's right. Exactly. Oh, my God.
And you are a girl from Brooklyn acknowledging Afghan. This is really, you know, you got to love the way a puzzle piece. This is why surrender to the infinite. It just knows how to make things work. Oh, my God. Kat, we are just about at the top of the hour. You're
okay,
exquisite, my friend. But wait, okay, share your website. Jules was telling me you got the website up. There's a website,
yes.
Correct?
KatParenti.com.
KatParenti.com, okay.
KatParenti.com, and you'll see it there in my emails there.
Okay, and now the book can be is Afghanistan, Blood and Honor.
That is correct.
It is on the webpage. It's available,
yes.
I'm assuming, Amazon. And
yes, that is correct.
Okay.
So you can buy it from the webpage or you can buy it from Amazon, either way.
Do you have a space on your webpage after they're done reading it where to donate or how to donate this? Is that available to people?
You know what? To be honest with you, I didn't put the website up. Somebody else did, and I haven't looked at it. What I would suggest is that they email me, kat.parenti@yahoo.com.
Kat.parenti@yahoo.com.
No,
again, that's also, what is? Okay. Kat.parenti?
You got it.
Okay, because let me, I'm looking, Kat, oh no, see, I just have KatParenti.com. I will add that also, your email, I will add to the episode page. So
wonderful.
That it's right on the episode page that they can find that. Would you be interested in doing more shows, just more and more, and just play with the Golden
Hawk?
And You're exquisite, my friend. You really are. You know, God bless the whole Almeen group that got me and you together.
Absolutely.
Indeed. Big hug to Lita when you see her. Tell her she's good.
I certainly will. And big hug to you, and we'll talk soon.
Absolutely. I will call you to reschedule as well.
All right,
everybody.
Dear.
Next week it's Sophia, the goddess Sophia. Have an amazing week. I love you all. And remember, awareness, awareness, awareness. It'll change your life. God bless, everybody. I'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye.